Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On, the new fall shows of 2007. For more information and news we talk about the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Hey, everybody.
Hello, my geeklings.
Welcome to Geeks On.
Welcome back.
Welcome to Geeks On.
Another fine episode. My name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
My name is Donald Marshall. I'm a video game professional and a writer here in sunny Hollywood, and I, too, am a geek.
My name is Matt Yang King, and I am an actor here in Los Angeles, and I, too, am a geek.
My name is Peter, and I am a screenwriter and director here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
Yay! Yay. Welcome, everybody.
We are Geeks On.
Nice to see you guys. Getting close to Halloween.
How is your geek week?
My geek week is pretty slow because you know that every video game system is gone in my home.
Aaron actually has Das Tremens right now because, we've taken all of, his electronics out of the house. So, he's going into withdrawal. He's just got nothing but a gigantic jar of,
Okay, that was me trying to install Leopard onto my Macintosh.
And how many hours have you spent trying to do that?
I've spent several hours because I got the blue screen of death, which you may have read about.
By a PC.
I thought that didn't happen on Mac.
Yeah, well, so did I.
All these Mac users say it never happens.
By a PC.
I was chewed out the other day when I suggested I've heard it happens multiple times.
Well, this is kind of a weird installation thing. So I got around. I did the fix to get around it, and now I have another problem. My Finder doesn't work, so I'm reinstalling it again to see if it works. So we're actually on a laptop. So if the sound quality is different, blame Leopard.
Why?
It's Geeks On another computer.
It's just like everything in my house that is technology oriented.
Yeah, you've had like that static electricity touch lately or something.
Yeah, it's my speaker system.
What's your last standing game system right now?
Your Wii is gone. The only standing one is the PlayStation 2.
The PS2 survived.
Yeah, PlayStation 2. My speaker system is dying. My music hard drive with all my music died three days ago.
Aaron has developed a new superpower to destroy technology.
Yeah,
but only his own.
So that's
he's Luddite man.
And then the
Captain Amish.
The other thing that I did, since I don't have news because it's all on my laptop, all on my computer here, is I saw 30 Days of Night. Last night.
He's forced to get out of the house and actually go see a movie.
Yeah. I was just staring at the wall. And anyway, I saw it and pretty boring.
What?
Yeah. It's boring.
Really. It is?
Yeah, I'm not going to ruin it for anybody.
Danny Houston is the lead vampire in it, and I worked with Danny Houston on Kreutzer Sonata, and
all the acting is fine, quite frankly.
Oh, really?
I don't have a problem with the acting, and I didn't have a problem really with it. It's not bad, like cheesy, crappily made movie bad.
Is crappily a word?
It is now.
Okay.
Crappily made movie. It's just boring in almost every level. Every decision was just obvious and boring. There's no style to the way it was filmed. It's filmed okay, but the look of it, no style. The acting is just okay. The story is pretty bad, actually. And then there's a weird sense of, like, they call it 30 Days of Night.
Right.
But you would swear to God it happened in one night.
Well,
you would swear to God the way they've written this movie, it only happens in 8 hours. And they even do a countdown clock, like, you know, we got to stay in this attic day 16. You go, what? The next scene is day 16? How the hell are they eating? Where are they crapping? I mean, like, really? They've survived 16 days in one scene?
I remember thinking that about the graphic novel. The graphic novel had a great idea.
Right.
And then just sort of executed it.
Well, it is a great idea. Well,
it is a great idea, but it was just sort of there on paper.
Ostensibly, nice. Don and I are going to
fuck you. Leopard is a fucking piece of shit software, by the way. Just want to put that out.
Yeah, Windows XP has been pretty solid. Just saying.
Yeah, I'm going to go install Windows on my fucking... Seriously, this is total bullshit.
Yeah.
No, time just to reinstall the last system.
All right, anyway. Sorry to interrupt. I'm done. I'm totally done.
I finally wrapped up work on my latest game.
Excellent.
So that's going to be going out. I think we may be in shelves in the U.S. before Christmas, but we'll definitely be on shelves in Europe.
Nice. Cool. So. PC only?
PC and Mac.
PC and Mac?
Yeah.
Nice. All right.
Yeah. Very, very cool. I just shot an episode of CSI New York, and it's going to be
really... Did they film that here?
It filmed out here.
That seems so
weird. It's going to be really, really cool. I got to do my own stunts.
Was it a smoking episode?
It was a smoking episode. I'm an illegal fireworks dealer, and I'm supposedly a suspect in a murder case, and I got to blow up an entire fireworks factory. So it should be very cool. I get to run on
rooftops. Is that why you have no eyebrows right now?
Yes, exactly.
I was wondering about that.
And that's the sort of albino look. It's just Ash.
I thought you were doing the Thompson twin sister.
No. Just Ash.
Yeah, you kind of look like that guy from the movie Powder.
Yeah. Most thinly veiled gay sci-fi film in the history of gay sci-fi films.
Really?
Yes, only second to... Come on. It's about a guy who's locked in a closet who comes out and who has his one sensitive girlfriend and who can see all the joy in everyone else, but nobody else can see it in him. And there's even a scene where he's watching a guy... take a shower, and it goes into slow-mo.
Okay, that's true. That's true.
And, like, it's just thinly veiled gay sci-fi movie.
Oh, I thought they were just reenacting the scene from Witness.
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, the director got in a little trouble, I seem to recall, also for that.
For Powder?
Well, no, the director, I seem to recall, and I'm just trying to remember from way back, that he actually had some weird issues as well. Just in terms of legal problems, in terms of
guys on his show, or
I don't know, we'll have to look it up.
Peter's just—he's
reaching
accusations.
Yeah, I want to be careful about what
screw
I say.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's like a little geeks on has no responsibility to what Peter says.
And in my spare time, what little spare time I've had, I've been reading the newest Terry Pratchett book, which is a lot of fun. And I know more about the banking system and economics than I've ever learned. I've never paid any attention to economics whatsoever, so it's interesting reading it. I'm playing Bioshock. I am near the end of Bioshock right now.
Cool.
Though I felt like I've been at the end of Bioshock for like the past 4 hours that I've been playing it. I always think I'm right at the end and there's always something more. So.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's good and bad because I hit a point where I'm like, well, okay, this is sort of a weak ending, but it's a good. I can accept it. It's not kind of the big ending.
And then it doesn't end.
And then it doesn't end. And then I'm like, basically there's this left turn and now I'm sort of doing something else that I do. I don't want to blow anything for anyone playing, so I have to be really vague. But
the real question about whether or not it's good or bad is it 4 a.m. and are you trying to get through it before you go to sleep?
Right. True. Well, that's been Halo for me. Halo has eaten my life briefly. Yes, Aaron, that's on the 360 that you don't have anymore?
Yes, yes.
Right. That was that the first thing to crap out?
What?
Your 360?
No,
the Wii.
Oh, the Wii. Wii went, then your sound system, then the 360.
Yeah.
Then the Mac now?
Yeah.
So, you know.
Your wife better take back the laptop when we're done with it.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, wow. I also met a guy on CSI New York who... big Asian dude, really cool, named Mike Lee, and he was talking about this show that he worked on. He was like, yeah, they call me up to Sunset, to Hollywood Boulevard, and I got to go stand in front of Man's Chinese Theater in a gigantic-ass Grim Reaper outfit. And he's like, they're paying me a SAG rate. I'm a stunt man, but they just want me to stand around in the Grim Reaper outfit, you know? And, I show up, they're not there. So people, want to come over and take pictures with me. And I'm, trying to push them away. And then they finally show up. No craft service. No, actually, they're just shooting on the fly. They're trying to steal the shot, And I'm, pretending to separate these guys. And they're asses. And the lead actor is like, I try to talk to him once. And he's like, hey, we're not paying you to talk. And I was like, God, it's just... is the worst experience. And then at the end of it, they're all like, hey, let's go out for sushi. And I'm like, I just want to go back to my car. And so, could somebody please take me to the car? And we drive around for 2 hours looking for a sushi restaurant. Still nobody's driving my car. He was like, it was the worst shooting experience ever until I got the check. And I was like, and what was the check? He goes, I never knew, but that was Borat. And so he's the Grim Reaper, I guess it's who separates Borat when he's in front of Man Chinese Theater. And he's like, that movie just paid and paid and paid and then paid some more for one day of work. He's like, I'm buying a car.
Wow.
I was like, yeah.
To play the Grim Reaper. That's fake.
Yeah,
that's fake.
It's amazing how much money you can make on these things. Yeah. I knew some extras, background work actors, who worked on The Scorpion King. And apparently what they did was they took him out into the middle of the desert, they dumped him there, and then every 8 hours they told him to charge over the dunes, right? They apparently kept them there for something like 72 hours straight.
Right? Jesus.
They never took him off the clock. And so they, the way the SAG rate works, they just keep piling on the money.
After 15 hours, golden time.
Yeah. So apparently a lot of these people are like, I can make the down payment on a new house. Thank you, Scorpion King.
I love it. Which is the reason why movies cost so much, because it's bad producing.
That's really why the enormous production costs. That and star rates seem to be the two reasons why movies cost so much now.
Nope. It's just waste of everything.
Shall we hit the news?
Yes.
News!
All right, who's going to start with news?
Donnie?
Why do I have to start the news?
Because I want you to. I can start.
You start the news.
All right, I'll start it.
No, I'll start the news.
Okay, fine, go ahead.
Okay, Comcast. Comcast Corporation is actively interfering with attempts by some of its high-speed internet subscribers, of which I am one, to share files online, a move that runs counter to the tradition of treating all types of net traffic neutrally or equally.
Oh, wait, you mean net neutrality? They lied about net neutrality?
My goodness! It seems to have come back and bitten us in the ass already. The interference, which the Associated Press confirmed through nationwide tests, is the most drastic example yet of data discrimination by a U.S. internet service provider. It involves company computers masquerading as those of its users. If widely applied by other ISPs, the other technology Comcast is using would be a crippling blow to BitTorrent, eDonkey, and Nutella file-sharing networks. While these are mainly known as sources of copyright music, software, and movies, BitTorrent in particular is emerging as a legitimate tool for quickly dissembling legal content.
Absolutely.
So these are
a lot of legit content
on BitTorrent. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. So long story short, we have our first instance of this actually happening, where net neutrality violation is starting to screw the small user. You know,
Small business user that's getting screwed, or is it just
anybody who wants to use BitTorrent?
Anybody who uses BitTorrent, which would include individuals and probably small businesses, you know.
Huh.
Or it would be big. I mean, if movie studios start using BitTorrents and things like that to distribute their content, and they use that service, they're going to get screwed.
That's what World of Warcraft uses, right? To update. Are you still playing, Don?
No.
You quit?
I quit a while back.
Yeah, and then I found out that you were still playing.
Yeah, for like a month.
Okay.
He had a relapse. He fell off the wagon. I saw an article headline. I didn't read the article, that said that basically Comcast was telling its employees, if you talk to anyone about the problems that we're having, if you talk to the press, you know, you will be fired.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that happens a lot with businesses.
I use BitTorrent. I mean, excuse me, I don't use BitTorrent. I do not use BitTorrent, in fact.
I think you fell off the wagon again.
Comcast. I use Comcast as my provider, mm-hmm. and it really bugs me that they would arbitrarily reduce my access to anything. I pay really good money to them.
Well, that's the whole point of net neutrality. I mean, I'm paying for the most premium service that I can get at my place.
Mm-hmm. Ditto.
You know,
And if I could pay for a higher service, I would too.
Damn straight,
it's coming. I called. I've been asking. They're putting in Fiber Channel all over. So,
And let's be specific about what it is that they're doing, which is basically when you when you are communicating to a peer-to-peer service, what they're doing is they're sending signals from Comcast that are interrupt signals. They're as if it was coming from you or the person that you're communicating with, saying, "We're done talking." That's how they're degrading it. They're actually intentionally putting a signal into your communication, saying, telling your computer to stop talking.
How does that give primacy to a different line?
because then they can use the bandwidth. Cutting down the bandwidth. So what their whole thing is saying, we need to protect the internet by making sure that the services that you want, like email and other things, aren't slow. And if somebody is sitting there downloading movies all day and all night and using up the bandwidth, then other people's emails are going to be slow. That's what their excuse is. So if we stop the bandwidth of certain things like movie
somebody
downloads or
downloading the new update for World of Warcraft,
then they can get higher speeds somewhere else. But they can also just then what they can do is just promise higher speeds and sell more. You get your, fast, email 100 times faster than our competitor. Oh, yeah. Well, it's because you've stunted everything else. We can't watch video anymore.
Interesting.
In essence, this is the argument in Sicko about healthcare. You get better healthcare because we won't give healthcare to, 98, to a large portion of the population.
Because we won't block our own providers from giving you the healthcare you're paying for.
Very interesting.
Right.
Anyways. All right. And on to a related story. The tree that ate cows. Anyone?
That's interesting.
Yeah. Lauren Coleman detours into cryptobotany as he comments on a strange news report from, I'm going to mangle this, Upanangadi, Mangalore, India, about a carnivorous tree that allegedly has a taste for cattle. From the Express News Service, Anand Gowda and the villagers struck mortal blows to the branches that turned limp and the cow was rescued. Upanangadi Range Forest Officer Subramanya Rao said that the tree was described as a pilimara, or a tiger tree in the native lingo. And then if you check out the article, Roy Mackle's book, Searching for Hidden Animals, his last chapter is entitled Monstrous Plants. And it's all about cryptobotany.
So this actually, the branches lifted the cow up?
There's a tree. Yeah, it ate the cow. And there's a picture of it.
There's a picture?
There's a picture of the tree and the cow inside the tree.
Okay.
Check it out.
Did it look real?
Yeah, it looked real.
All right,
that's why I grabbed it.
All right.
It was on the BBC. I mean, that's where I found it.
I have a question for you guys. Is French mud the new penicillin? Let's find out.
Duh. Well, French mold on bread was the old penicillin, right?
Scientists have discovered...
It was mold on French bread.
Mold on French bread. Oh.
There you go. Scientists have discovered a new and highly effective weapon against deadly superbugs like MRSA, which are sweeping through Britain's dirty hospital wards. And this is a French green muck. Basically, what they found is a clay made from ancient volcanic ash near Massif Central. They've put it on this MRSA, which I believe is staph infection. Is that correct? It's also...
I don't know.
There are new staph infections that are coming out that are incredibly resistant. Yeah.
So I believe this is what that is. And in experiments, this clay killed up to 99% of the superbug colonies within 24 hours, whereas control samples grew 45-fold in the same period.
Mm.
So they're not sure why this works exactly. They're still trying to figure it out. The primary hypothesis is that it might have to do with the clay minerals transfers elements.
Super mud.
Not yet identified. Or it might just be that no one single element is toxic to the element, but a combination of elements and chemical conditions that attack the bacteria from different angles overwhelm its defense system. But it's kind of cool. I mean, people have been using mud for, forever to treat things.
Playing in the mud, good for you.
Well, okay, so for those of you who don't believe in the process of evolution, now I'm not talking about the beginning of existence of us, but those of you who just don't believe in the process of evolution at all, it's getting a little silly when you start seeing these bacterias and staph infections, all that.
That are resistant.
That are evolving outside of the medicines we have.
Aaron. It's not because of that. God is angry at us.
Well,
he's punishing us.
He is.
He's punishing us for having health care. Health care is wrong.
He is punishing us by evolving the staph infection.
Letters should be sent to Peter at geekson.com. That's
anyway,
Peter at geekson.com.
T-E-R.
I don't know. It's just kind of
you
obvious.
Get to grapple with a hate mail.
All right.
All right. Move on. Who's next?
Aaron, you have a new story? Oh.
Not even a rumor for us?
Not even a rumor?
No.
You want to do my other news story?
No.
Okay. Well, actually, we did talk about evolution a little while ago, and in our Bionics episode,
right?
I put forward it's not an unpopular idea that basically our technology is in some ways hampering or removing certain elements of our evolution.
It's interfering or helping and aiding us in evolving to the next level.
Well, the human race, according to this article, will one day split into two separate species, an attractive, intelligent, ruling elite, and an underclass of dim-witted, ugly, goblin-like creatures, according to a top scientist.
Oh, H.G. Wells?
Yeah.
That's creative.
The article itself, if you go to this article, it's got big old pictures from the Time Machine showing the Eloi and the Morlocks. So, I mean, come on. You know, this clearly hard science article I'm sending you to here.
Right.
The alarming prediction comes from the evolutionary theorist Oliver Curry from the London School of Economics.
Okay.
Who says that the human race will have reached its physical peak by the year 3000. These humans will be between 6 foot and 7 foot tall, and they will live up to 120 years. Physical features will be driven by indicators of health, youth, and fertility that men and women have evolved to look for in potential mates.
Nice. Yep. Hell yeah.
But it also suggests that advances in cosmetic surgery and other body modification will eventually homogenize everyone's appearance. You know, everyone's going to look pretty much the same. They're all going to be coffee
blonde. You know the woman who's got the cat lady who's gotten the excessive amounts of plastic surgery?
She's so scary.
I ran into her, like
really?
Bumped into her as she was coming out of the ladies' room at the Grove. She's brightening.
Yeah.
I've looked at a picture of her and gone like, but when you get somebody coming out of a doorway at you with those bright blue eyes and that mask, it's terrifying. Mm. She was scary close up.
There's some fucked up doctors out there.
Who let her? Never mind. Go on, Don. Sorry.
Look at Michael Jackson.
Men will have symmetrical facial features, deeper voices, and bigger penises. women will have glossy hair, smooth hairless skin, large eyes, and perked breasts.
I'm glad that we can verify this since it's set in the year 3000.
Come on. He's an economist. You can't argue with that, man.
Here's what I'm wondering is how do you get into a news article these days? Like, why can't I say something like that and then have the news report? Like, who is this jackass? He just says something.
Well, he's Oliver Curry from the London School of Economics.
So why is he in a news article?
Because he's Mr. Curry.
Claiming that by the year 3000, we're going to be physically perfect. And then he claims we're going to degrade over the next 1,000 years' time. 10,000. By 10,000 years later, our reliance on technology will have begun to dramatically change our appearance.
But everything I say is total bullshit, and it doesn't end up in the freaking paper.
You're not an economist. Mm. Medicine will weaken our immune system, and we will begin to appear more childlike.
Wait, why more childlike? If we're going to be hotter and all that, we wouldn't be.
Well, you're eventually, with medicine, you know, making us live longer and longer and more reliance on it, you just become a big brain sack. You know, you don't really need to work.
They just say we're going to get hotter.
Yeah, to the first 3,000 years, and then after that, just slowly.
Oh, I see. Maybe this is his view of what hot is.
This is exactly what Isaac Asimov said in one of the Robot Chronicles, where all the humans were taken care of by robots, and they lived in these individual enclaves where it was just them.
So he's one stealing guy. From everybody.
He's totally stealing from everybody.
Or, according to the writer of this, who actually think probably misunderstood some of the things this guy was talking about.
Well, right.
Had the super evolved, beautiful people living side by side with the small, dumb goblin people and started drawing analogies to H.G. Wells, the Time Machine, the Eloi, and the, the Morlocks. We were talking about Morlocks earlier tonight.
Yeah, because everyone steals the name.
You know, we can't even tell what's going to happen in 50 years. I mean,
come on.
Like so many predictions are so incredibly wrong. You know, we won't even be around at 3,000.
I'm sure.
Please. Was that your prediction?
Yeah, it's my prediction.
I remember watching Nova with my parents when I was a little kid, right? It was hosted by Carl Sagan. It was this big kind of thing.
Billions and billions.
It wasn't Cosmos?
Cosmos.
It might have been Cosmos, but I think it was Nova.
Okay. Cosmos was the one that was
and
hosted
one
by
one of the things Carl that Sagan. One of the episodes talked about what would have happened if the dinosaurs hadn't been wiped out, right? And he's talking about, you know, our best scientists shows that if dinosaurs had continued to evolve on the route they were taking, eventually they might have looked something like this. And he whips a sheet off of a kind of a dummy that they made. And it looks suspiciously like the Sleestaks from Land of the Lost.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But, like, with slightly more human features and, like, human hands. And
right, because everything eventually evolves to human-like looking.
Yeah, right. An opposable thumb, the whole nine yards.
Ugh. Okay.
Read David Brin, people. So I picked Aaron's news story, board game price fixing.
Oh, I heard about this. Internet and...
Board game publisher has begun engaging in price fixing, a practice newly liberalized in the U.S. in the wake of a June Supreme Court decision. In June 2007, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a major 97-year-old law on price fixing, which prohibits manufacturers from coercing retailers on how to set their prices. The new ruling essentially wrote that the old law was too rigid, and each instance of price fixing would now be evaluated on a case-by-case basis to determine if it harmed or helped the consumer. This basically went relatively unnoticed for a while. But last week, Mayfair Games, the U.S. publisher of the popular board game Settlers of Catan, near and dear to all of our hearts, as well as other games, sent letters to all of its retailers demanding that they limit any discounts on their games to 20% of the suggested retail price. This is purportedly to boost struggling brick-and-mortar stores against the spread of discounting online stores, which have been stealing their business.
Yeah, the problem is the brick-and-mortar stores are dying off. They are completely dying off, and they keep screaming at the distributors, saying, telling them, we can't compete with these big warehouse companies that are selling them for 20%, 30% off, that we cannot do that. They have to sit on our shelves, and, you know, rent has to be paid on these games when they're sitting there, and they're dying off. And so the game companies want those stores out there because that's partly how they advertise and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're kind of in a little bit of a pickle there.
It's the same thing as, you know, there's not so much going out for video games. They're not so much, you know, that community sense of going out to the gaming store is not there as much
anymore. Well, there is no community in buying a video game. There's just a lot more people buying video games.
Right. But, I mean, also, the arcade days, the 1980 heyday of arcade, you know, going to the arcade, playing Pac-Man, Galaxy,
yeah,
and all
gone.
That. No, absolutely. But this is, you know, the game stores are showing sort of going through the same thing now.
Well, it's interesting. I find the game stores and the newspapers are sort of in the same boat where people go to the gaming store, they kind of see what they want, and then they buy it online because it's cheaper to do it that
right.
way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whereas with newspapers, people don't buy newspapers anymore. They go to these internet websites to get their news by and large. But those internet websites get all of their news from the newspapers by and large. Mm-hmm. So – since they are usually getting that information for free from the newspapers are starting to die off.
Well,
same thing with the brick and mortar stores.
But a lot of those sites, like you're talking about aggregators of news. I mean, there's the producers of news like New York Times, LA Times. Then there are aggregators of news like Dig, Reddit. Mm-hmm. But most of those places, or even Google is an aggregator. But most of those places actually push you towards those sites. I mean, like, you know, a lot of times when I go to Reddit, I mean, yeah, I'm just clicking on a link that's taking me to the news story.
So, yeah, but brick and mortar stores don't have anything like that. Like,
right.
There's nothing that's on the internet that says, if you like this game,
go to the Last Grenadier.
Yeah, contact your local store. It's not like that.
And I would challenge that the redirection of people to those websites are not saving the newspapers.
Yeah.
The newspapers are – their circulation is down over the past couple of years.
Is that deep linking?
Massive financial problems.
If the New York Times was smart, what they would do is they would actually create a page that's like Reddit, which allowed people to vote up and down the news stories on the New York Times to the ones that they think are interesting.
Hilton number four.
A lot of the newspapers have – I'm not saying this is a good thing or a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that the newspapers are actually failing to adapt –
yeah.
To the new time period, the New York Times actually tried to force people to pay to access their news articles for a while.
And that didn't work.
Well, back to the game store, brick and mortar game stores. How do you guys feel about the price fixing? I mean, do you want to see brick and mortar game stores more than you want to see don't want to see price fixing, or are you willing to take price fixing and save the brick and mortars?
Well, I consistently buy from the game stores.
I try to
more than I buy online.
I mean, try to go to the game store and buy from them. I really do. And so those guys can be jackasses, too.
Yeah.
I know that. I mean, and they do nothing. Nothing.
To help sales.
To help sales, including the ones near us. Well, there is one that has a good community, but there's zero community outreach at all.
Well, it just cracks me up.
If anyone is in Western Massachusetts, I'm just going to say a brief plug for Fantasy Realms, a store that one of us geeks happens to have some investments in. So Fantasy Realms in Western Massachusetts, in lovely Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Stop in and buy something, won't you?
Do they have a lot of like community stuff, like gaming nights?
Is that our first shameless plug?
Absolutely.
Well, like I'm going to say it right here. The last Grenadier,
you do it for trenches, you know?
That's true.
The last Grenadier is terrible about that. Now, there's a game store right up the street that's really teeny tiny that they have game night like every night. And apparently the weekends are packed. But it's
Fantasy Realms has game nights, and they actually have the Games Workshop, like war game.
Oh yeah, room, right, sure, yeah.
Well, that's fun.
With that all set up for people to come in and play.
Now, Games Workshop is great about that. Like, yeah. If you go into a Games Workshop store, they're constantly getting you to play. To the point of just aggravation, they're constantly asking if you just want to play a quick game when you walk in.
So somewhere less than Games Workshop and much more than Last Grenadier.
Yes. Yeah. And by the way, if you're a game shop,
there's a certain snotty attitude a lot of brick and mortar clerks have.
You don't really understand Warhammer,
which I've never seen at Fantasy Realms in Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Another thing, if you're a game shop owner, clean your store.
Yes,
for
please.
God's sake, you guys live like filthy animals, and I'm completely sick and tired of it.
It's called a dust cloth.
Do you remember really Last Grenadier foul. Before they moved? I swear to God, it was like a 14-year-old's room when his mom when a 14-year-old's having a standoff with their mom.
Do you remember Arrow's Hobby?
Arrow's, man.
Arrow's Hobby in Santa Monica.
Do you remember the sign? It says Arrow's Hobby, where it looks like Arrow's Hobby blew up. That was the sign that was like above the... You couldn't even walk through the door.
To this day, it still is this way.
No, they cleaned it up.
They cleaned it up?
It is
the
clean.
The man died. The owner died.
Yeah.
And he left.
The breakdancing guy?
No.
The older guy?
Anyway, older dude with the glasses.
For those of you out there in our audience who have absolutely no clue what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, sorry.
This store was very frightening. Basically, this guy's idea of, you know, kind of keeping the store was when he got new stuff, he would literally just take a box of stuff and just dump it on top of other stuff on the floor. We're not talking about in
the
bin.
He would pile it up in general areas.
So yeah. When you walked in, this was like... You were a little afraid that like you were going to bump into something and knock it down and kill someone in the next aisle.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, you know.
So. But this is not atypical with game stores. I'm telling you.
No, it's
the
not.
People
yeah.
out there, you need to get your shit together. And that's one of the reasons why people don't like walking into your store.
Yeah. The gaming store is a business. And I think a lot of people who run gaming stores forget that.
Yeah.
You know?
Boy.
Right.
Sorry.
They treat it in a lot of ways. Like I think some weekend antiquers treat their business.
Yeah.
Of just sort of like, I've got cool stuff. People will want to buy it.
Aaron,
I don't need to sell it.
I don't think you should take your anger at your Mac out on the game store owners.
I'm totally raging right now.
Look at it. It's like laughing at me.
Something happened to the Mac. Oh, no. What happened?
Oh. It says it's the finder's. I don't know.
Okay.
I have an article called 11 and Disillusioned by one of our readers. Written by one of our readers. He's 11 years old, Thomas Bryant.
Hello, and, Thomas.
He wrote this, and I thought he was just very intelligent in how he wrote. And so I wanted to see what other listeners thought of an issue he brought up. Okay, he says, I'm an 11-year-old geekling. I listen to podcasts, and I can't stop playing video games. I'm looking for advice from people older than I am because when I first saw the Spider-Man 3 game trailer, I was really excited. I especially liked the idea of being in the subways, the sewers, anytime you liked, even if you were outside of story mode. Since I have a PS2, I was glad it was going to be available on that platform. I rented the PS2 version of the game and had the biggest video game disappointment of my life. The game was completely different from the one I had seen in the trailers. Instead of the impressive graphics, everyone looks like they were made in 2 hours. I can understand this a little. They're on different systems. But what made me feel like I was being cheated was that the game felt so cheaply put together, like they rushed or something. The graphics in the game are so bad they look like they're PS1 graphics. There's no real texture to the characters, so they look like they're wearing paper masks. There are a lot of game glitches in this. Enemies aren't even fully colored, and they often turn invisible at random times. Every trailer has been promoting the PS3, Xbox 360, and Wii versions. There was no warning that the PS2 version would be a completely different game. The trailer showed Scorpion, Kingpin, and Rhino in the game. In the PS2, they're not even referred to. I wouldn't mind if the PS2 version was slightly different from its next-gen counterparts, such as missing one boss character from the game. But they didn't just release a very different game. They released one of terrible quality. I wrote to Activision. I told them what I've told you, but they basically blew me off and said the PS2 couldn't handle it. He wrote to us and wants to know what we think. He says, am I missing something? Do you think Activision gave me an honest answer? Do you think it's fair that they advertised one game on the PS3 and then released a rushed, unfinished version of the game on the PS2? Anyway, I'm just glad I rented it and didn't spend my months of my allowance to buy it. Sincerely, Thomas.
Well, Thomas, they gave you an honest answer, which is one, that the PS2 can't handle it.
Well, here's,
but they are kind of jacking you.
Yeah, here's the deal. There is a huge difference between your PS2 and your PS3.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be – none of the games they advertise, if they are coming out for both, it's not going to be a missing boss no matter what game you buy. But here's the deal. If it's just a shitty PlayStation 2 game and they're promising you a PlayStation 2 game, that's the real drag.
Yeah.
You know, and when you watch those commercials, you've got to look on the bottom to make sure that it says you know what you're buying. And please check out the websites like IGN and GameSpot, because they still rate the PlayStation 2 versions of them. And they will totally go off on them.
Yeah. They don't put Times Square and the Chrysler Building because both of those have too many ads in them and they don't want to be responsible for basically dealing with all those ads. Yeah.
You can't actually put a landmark in the game without paying royalties to whoever owns that landmark.
Correct.
But wait, those were in the 360 PlayStation 3 versions, right?
I do not know.
They may have been altered versions of it. Like, okay. They alter what the Empire State Building looks like in a lot of games. And I know they did in a previous Spider-Man.
Like, the Flatiron Building is in, because that's where the Daily Bugle is or whatever.
Right.
That's in there. I mean, you know, they told you the truth. It's a PlayStation 2 game, and it will not look like a PlayStation
2 game. The way they port these games is they're usually designed for one system. So if they're designed for the 360, for example, then porting them over to the PS is actually kind of hard to begin with. Then when they move it over from PS3 to PS2, all they can really do is actually remove assets from the game. They rarely will create new assets to repair the removed assets. So what you're going to end up doing is basically playing a stripped down version of a copy of a game off of, you know, that was copied
off of another
from 360.
System. Okay.
So you're playing a second generation copy that's been stripped down.
Right.
Wait, this is like Multiplicity, but for video games. Every copy of a copy degrades. Oh my God.
Oh my God, did you just exactly quote it. A Michael Keaton movie?
Go by. Oh wait, he's 11.
Yes, I did.
Unfortunately, you're not going to see that many more high-quality games coming out for the PlayStation 2.
No.
I think God of War was the last one, and your mom maybe might not let you play that one.
Go buy a 360.
But it's good.
Yeah, God of War is good.
So if you can sneak it, I highly recommend it.
And we've actually had a few emails from happy PS3 users, but I still haven't really seen the body of games that would inspire me to buy a PS3 yet.
Geeks On in no way endorses violence for teens.
So the games that are coming out soon for the PS3 the Uncharted looks interesting to a lot of people. Metal Gear Solid coming up is kind of a system seller.
Yeah.
Maybe Haze, maybe. I don't know.
Haze at least is trying to do something new. It's at least just trying to be a new franchise. I'm sort of tired of all these franchise games. I'm really tired of them.
You mean old franchise games?
Old franchise games. Like,
Resident Evil.
BioShock, bless you for doing something new and different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mass Effect, BioShock. I mean, there's a lot of...
Exactly. Well, now I just want to see something that's not an FPS. So
Mass Effect.
I've been screaming that for years.
Yeah.
You know? The day they finally get an online game that I can play with my friends that doesn't involve me having to, you know, turn and shoot... with that freaking I'm so tired of it. I don't want to play.
Well, you got screwed on that on the Star Trek game, and then I think you were done.
Yeah, no more FPSs.
All right, let's move to our topic.
On. We're already past our time. Peter, why don't you lead us in?
Well, this week we're going to talk about some of the new TV shows that are coming out, some of the old TV shows that are continuing, and we're going to give you sort of our take on what's working, what's getting better, what's getting worse, what looks awesome.
It's another opinion show. our opinions.
Yes, yeah. But we're such educated opinions.
What do you want to start with?
Well, why don't we start with a very geeky show? Has anyone seen Big Bang Theory?
I thought we were only doing geeky shows.
A very geeky
oh,
show.
Oh, very, very.
Big Bang geeky. Theory.
Big Bang Theory.
I really like it.
I love Big Bang Theory.
I sent clips to Don and he criticized them.
And they're getting better.
They were ripoffs. The clip you sent was a direct ripoff of a famous Laurel and Hardy routine. Trying to get a piano up some stairs.
Yeah, but they were putting,
okay, that, yeah,
they
that's
were putting a geeky spin on it.
That's not a good representation. Like, tonight's episode was hilarious, and I think they're getting better and better. And they're getting geekier. I think that they've kind of realized that people are still going to laugh.
Yeah.
You know, like one guy dressed up in his Halloween costume was the Doppler effect. And he's got this kind of, and it was funny. You know? And he's trying to, everyone's like, what are you, a zebra? He's like, I'm a Doppler effect. So anyway, I think they're getting geekier and geekier, and they're getting more comfortable with the geeky humor.
I haven't seen it myself yet. I've only seen the clips that people emailed me. And actually some other people sent me some clips too I wasn't impressed by. But the reviews of it I have heard have been repeatedly good writing and excellent acting from the two lead guys.
Yeah. The tall, skinny guy who is not the Roseanne guy.
He slays.
He is awesome in it.
Yeah.
And he's kind of got this weird Asperger syndrome type of character. He just does not socially interact well. There's kind of a wall.
But he also recognizes that his friend does not interact well, and he sees when he's going to be dysfunctional, but he doesn't see when he himself is going to be dysfunctional.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is genius.
Yeah.
So, and there was this one episode that I thought was really, really funny, where basically one of the geeks is actually getting laid in the next room. Oh, my gosh, a geek's getting laid. Yes! It's changing the face of television! And and so the other guy...
Now if he was only Asian.
He goes across the street, or across to the apartment across the hall, and he grabs this girl and he says, I need your help with symbology, you know, with the study of symbols. And she goes, well, what do you mean? And he pulls her back across into his apartment, and there's a tie hanging around the
doorknob.
The doorknob. And he goes, what does it mean? And she goes, oh, come on. You went to college. And he says, yes, but I was 12.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's just and of course she explains to him what it means. And so as soon as she leaves, he picks up his phone and he dials. And of course he's calling his friend in there and he goes, just wanted to let you know, message received. It's like,
oh God.
Yeah, no, the whole thing, and there is an Asian and there's an Indian.
There's an Indian dude.
Indian guy in there.
He's very funny.
Yeah. So anyway, the group of friends is great. The writing is great. I can see the show going for a long time. It's kind of a love triangle, or not love triangle. There's kind of a love story, moonlighting thing
aspect
going on.
Yeah,
yeah, it's really interesting.
So anyway.
So we're looking at three thumbs up and a deferment.
Yes.
Yeah, I really like it. I would recommend this show for sure.
Yeah, I totally recommend it. It's not one of the things I'm going to track regularly, but I think it's fantastic.
All right, let's go to the...
Come at TiVo.
Let's go to the competitor to that show, which is Chuck.
Chuck. Is that oh, it's on at the same time?
No, but they're major competitors. They're trying for the same audience. They're trying for the same relative demographic.
Someone talk about what... Someone give the storyline. What is Chuck about?
The basic premise of Chuck is he has accidentally downloaded into his brain the compiled secrets of the CIA and NSA databases.
Yeah.
So,
which are normally kept separate from each other. And so each agency can't see each other's material.
Right.
And so there's clues that can't be unlocked.
Yes.
But through him.
But they're hidden in his subconscious. So he only knows things when he looks at something that sparks it.
Right.
So
he is watched over by a CIA super spy who pretends to be his girlfriend. And a
smoking hot.
Yes.
And a NSA super agent who comes across as sort of a Tackleberry gung-ho, over-the-top brute.
Yes.
Right. Played by Jane from Firefly.
Yeah.
Or if you know him as my bodyguard. The bodyguard from My Bodyguard.
He was the bodyguard from My Bodyguard?
Yeah, I think so.
Right?
Don't know.
I don't know. I'm going to have to look that up.
He was.
Anyway, what do people think of this?
I really loved the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
I really hated the second episode.
I've watched them all, and they're kind of a roller coaster-y about, like the last one was good.
Oh, really?
Okay. And they had another, God, there was another smoking hot shit. Every secret spy they bring in
every
is smoking
spy
hot.
Every spy you meet is just ridiculously, ridiculously good looking.
So it's kind of got a James Bond joke about it, you know.
They do a really good job of taking the girls in the show and showing them in, you know, states of undress, you know, swimsuits, very sexy outfits. Yeah.
When you're a super spy, you have to be in your underwear at some point, apparently. Right.
They do the Alias thing, you know, where they, you know. So, but, you know, I kind of have a similar feeling where it's a little up and down.
Well, they do the Alias thing badly, though.
Like, sorry?
It's cheesecake. It's not Alias.
Well, in Alias, it was also cheesecake at times. Come on.
But well-executed cheesecake.
And it's okay here. I actually think I actually like that aspect of the show here.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's so obvious
like,
that
Alias was occasionally campy, but this one stoops below campy for me.
But the show is campy.
Yeah, the show is supposed to be campy.
The show is campy, but their humor doesn't reach – the humor doesn't reach campiness to me. It's like poorly executed campy.
Yeah, but your level of campy is like total. I mean, you like stuff that's like way deep in campy.
Okay.
Like dead. I mean, like to me, Chuck is a little campy.
Okay. Dead or Alive.
Dead or Alive to you is a little campy. Dead or Alive is like freaking.
For me, Xena is campy.
Yeah, but that stuff is.
Alias was campy.
That's unbearable campy. Okay.
Anyway,
No. I know 1,010 lesbians that would cut you for saying that.
Yes, well, you know,
I'll wrestle them.
Pulling back to the point of the show, Chuck's kind of like one thumb up, one thumb down for me.
Yeah,
in the sense that I really like it and I'm still watching it, but it's not quite gelling as well as I would like it to gel. And part of the reason for that for me is that it's got a very episodic feel to it.
Yeah,
where. You know, it's formulaic in a way.
Yeah, it's very formulaic.
Well, and it's completely empty of emotion to me. Like, it's people doing stuff.
Yeah.
Right? But Chuck is not likable.
Oh,
Chuck
come
is
on.
Just.
No, awesome.
I do.
Actually, Chuck is great.
I don't like him.
He's one of my favorite parts. I love Chuck. I love Jane in it.
I like Jane. Chuck is not sympathetic to me.
Oh, no.
He's the best thing on the show.
But let's keep in mind, you don't like the show. So, I mean, you know.
No, I actually do like the show. I don't love the show.
Okay.
I watch it. I'm up to date with it as Aaron is.
Right.
I didn't drop it like a lot of the other ones coming up this season. Yeah. I just find it hasn't found its legs yet.
Yeah.
Huh. I think it's not campy yet. It's not as funny as it could be yet. It's not as action-y as it could be yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's just kind of a hodgepodge of half, like, adequately executed stuff. Right?
Like, they haven't hit the gas for you yet on any of those things.
I find it adequately funny, adequately campy, adequately action-oriented.
Thumbs across.
But not good at any of them.
Right. What I would say
Thumbs across, Peter.
About thumbs across.
Aaron?
I want to say thumbs up, but here I worry that the shtick, which is somebody comes to town,
somebody's trying to get into Chuck's head.
He gets a little flash, and they have to go on an adventure every single week is going to get tiring. So I'm a little worried about it.
We'll see how the writer's strike affects that.
So anyway, thumbs up though. I think it's a fun show.
Okay.
So three neutrals and one thumbs up.
Yeah. But what's interesting, I just want to mention about the show is that for Big Bang Theory, while I think it's really found its legs and it works well, you know, I can watch it, not watch it. With Chuck, I'm a little more interested. I'm actually watching it more than I'm watching Big Bang Theory, just because I like the concept so much and I want it to work. You know, that's pulling me back. You know, at least more consistently.
Right.
So,
what's next?
Can I suggest one that I tried to watch? I really tried. I tried, and I think you tried too. Flash Gordon.
Oh, really?
Flash Gordon on the sci-fi
tried desperately.
Was atrocious.
I tried really hard,
and I really wanted to watch a couple episodes in order to talk about this.
It was atrocious.
It's unbearable. I mean, it really is like watching.
Honestly, though, having watched, a friend of mine is worked on it. Right.
Okay.
I'm trying desperately to be positive about the show. I felt the writing is subpar. It's not a good reinvention of the original work at all.
No, subpar is. If I'm sipping in your friend's
show, being so generous.
Subpar is probably the nicest thing you could possibly say.
You know that Buck Rogers thing? Like every once in a while they would have a really, really horrible Buck Rogers episode where it looked like the entire episode was filmed in a gigantic soundstage with beige walls.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so everything occurs like in that Mork and Mindy Nanu Nanu land where like he's talking to Orson. Oh, right. I feel like the whole of Flash Gordon existed in that universe. It was like just had no background, had no structure, had no style, no form, just limbo.
The other thing is, like, there's this kind of weird, like, we want to be the CW thing going on.
Got the Krypton Creek thing going on. Everybody is so fucking good looking on that show. It's insane.
But, like, weird decisions like
Ming.
Ming the Merciless is just
like 22.
Yeah. It's like.
No, he's like in his 40s. You got to give him that.
He looks like he's barely in his 30s.
He's like 40s Third Reich looking guy.
That's terrible.
My name is Ming the Merciless. I'm 14 years old. Well, I'm going to hurt you now.
The one thing I'm going to say about the show is, though, I think the lead, the Flash Gordon guy, the Dale character, Dale Arden character, Ming, actually, the three of them, the episodes I saw, they were trying desperately.
Oh, yeah.
Trying desperately to deliver these lines well.
You know,
and they were doing a good job considering what they were given.
I couldn't comment on the acting because I
but the writing has been so horrific.
Atrocious.
But also just decisions, not just the writing of like the dialogue and the story, the decisions that they made about the concept of the show is outrageous and just shit. It's utter garbage.
Like, why would you go with, I mean, like, there's so much style to the Flash Gordon universe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean.
But those costumes, I mean, like, who approved those costumes? They look like they were done by the art department of my high school theater.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like,
now, you know, I understand it's a little budget, too, but.
I managed to watch it up to the episode where they introduced the Hawkmen. Right?
Oh,
and for those of us who are fans of the 80s...
Brian
Blessed is the Hawkman. Man, those guys are cool. I mean, the costumes are kind of dumb, but they were fun to watch. These guys, they like cast a whole bunch of like extra, like Australian gay porn extras. They put them in little leather capes.
Yes.
And then they had them throw their head back in the background and go, caw! Every couple seconds. And honestly, have never pitied actors the way I pitied these people in this episode.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I bled for these people. You know? And so honestly, but despite those three people that I pointed out saying that I thought were doing very good attempts at maintaining some sort of illusion of a show going on, every supporting actor in that show is abysmal.
Barren, man.
The Ming's daughter. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Ming's daughter in the 80s movie, she is so hot. In the Flash Gordon movie, in the Flash Gordon TV show, she's hot until she opens her mouth.
Yeah.
And then the actress destroys any illusion of sexual appeal that character might have.
What? They're all from Brooklyn.
Well, and she's dumb. She's Paris Hilton in space.
But also, the one episode I saw, like, Flash is hanging out on Earth still. The problem, like, he was still just hanging out on Earth, and then Ming's just up there just kind of dorking
there's
around.
There's no, like, isn't there supposed to be, a time clock ticking down
Even
here?
If you don't have that, don't...
Well, they did introduce that in later episodes.
Why not hire an Asian dude to play Ming? Is it so hard? The guy's name is Ming. Could we give you another, hint?
Different planet,
that one's sort of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, though.
Yeah, could you
Ming
imagine?
Was the epitome of the Asian stereotype
It was Max von Sydow.
For generations, he was the epitome of bad Asian casting.
Right.
Of racism in Hollywood.
But why not change that, then?
They did. They cast a white guy, and now you're not happy with
that. Well, no, they cast a white guy before. Max von Sydow played
Why
Ming.
Why
aren't
you
yeah,
bitching about
awesome.
Making Flash Asian?
Max von Sydow knocked that shit out of the park. You cannot argue that in any way, shape, or form.
All right. Let's move on to our next show.
I think it's safe to assume four thumbs down to Flash Gordon.
Down.
I haven't seen it, but I'll put two extra thumbs down just for fun.
Three thumbs down and a neutral.
Yeah. All right. Okay. All right. So how about, since we're talking about the crap, why don't we talk about Bionic Woman?
Oh, hey!
Wait, what are you saying?
We already ragged on
Let's
this.
Try not to influence other people's decisions here.
You know,
okay, Bionic Woman.
All I can say is I couldn't finish the first episode.
Yes.
I stopped watching after the first 20, 30 minutes. And my wife, who was not even watching it, was listening to it. She goes, wow, this is really...
It's horrific.
Really bad writing.
And I feel bad because Will-Yun Lee, who's the Asian dude on it, I like him. I think he's a strong actor. And he's just... You cannot tell.
He sucks.
There's nobody on there that's good, though.
Yeah.
Even Starbuck came on and sucked.
Well, no,
Starbuck
is unbearable. There are two supporting characters I like on that show. The guy who's her boss, who I just always like.
The guy from
God. He has the worst lines to pull off in history.
But he manages to kind of smirk his way through.
Why are you here? Aren't you supposed to be out saving the world?
Who wrote that?
Yeah. Oh, so bad.
Who wrote that?
And the new Sandy Duncan character I kind of liked it. But.
He is consistently good in other things I've seen him do. And I don't know if it's the lines he has to say or
it's
what.
The lines. The lines are bad.
I can't figure. And I mean, seriously, but, Katie, what's her shit, needs to get off that show. Because to me, this is career it ruining.
Ending. Yeah,
I'm breaking ending. With the rest of you. I'm breaking with the rest of you on Katie Sackhoff.
Oh, you got to be.
I'm not saying she's good, but I'm not saying she's chewing the scenery the way you guys do either.
She's playing sexy bad in the worst possible sexy bad way. I mean, it's like, in fact, I'm almost getting upset for her right now.
I feel like she's playing a caricature, but she's.
I'm going to try and get her on the show, guys.
I don't feel that she sucks.
All right. Okay.
However, the Bionic Woman sucks the life out of every scene she's in. She's the most boring.
Peter has the biggest Tai Chi thumbs down right now.
I've never seen anyone who's supposed to be carrying a series be so relentlessly and ruthlessly dull in every choice she makes as an actress.
Well, I bet you it's one of those things like Garrett told us about, where somebody's directing her to be a machine.
You're part machine. You have no emotion.
Yeah, I mean, to stop ragging on the actors here, you're right. I've seen some of these actors not. I mean, I like What's-Her-Face.
Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah, we all love Katie Sackhoff.
I don't know what's going on there, but to move on to other things, the writing in there, as far as plot-wise, they do things that are just completely bizarro for the characters. Like, she's supposed to just not want to say, go on these missions, and then she, at the end of the episode, just says things like, okay, I'm in, but we're doing it my way.
Yeah, what was the episode that you showed me where she shows up and she's ticked off, and then she flipped, literally, on one line, like, from being like, I'm gonna kill you and leave this agency. What'd you have for lunch?
Yeah, it's just
like, what?
Characters aren't making making correct decisions.
But you see, I realized we were in trouble.
Half human, so you have to switch your emotions constantly.
I realized when we were in trouble when we were watching the pilot, and the name of the head writer for that for the pilot, and I'm assuming for the series, came up, Lita Kalogridis. Those of you in the in crowd know that this is the wonderful creative mind behind Birds of Prey.
Oi.
Oh, that nice. Steaming pile from way back.
The other horrible thing that they've done.
Why don't you carry a weapon? I am the weapon.
The other horrible thing that they've done to the concept of her being a bionic woman and a reluctant hero is that Jamie Summers had an arm and legs, and that's pretty much in the ear, but the rest of her was totally human, and there was that kind of. She was fragile everywhere else. Mm-hmm. I mean, even in her fight scene, she wasn't a badass fighter. And when she blocked people or whatever, she had put this thing that looked like a crowbar up. She was constantly just using it to, like, defend things off. And you could tell the rest of her was really fragile. And you worried about her. Well, they haven't done – now she's got nanobots running through her. She fights – the nanobots fight for
her. They're programmed fighting routines.
Which is dumb as shit. Yeah. And then they also – she's got super healing. So it's essentially she's just a superhero and have – she might as well be bionic all over. She might as well just be a robot.
Well, the other thing that weirded me out – this is not really a commentary on the show just so much as my own politics. The black guy that's on the show is Captain Homophobe from Grey's Anatomy. So they wrote it. They write him out of one series for saying something naughty, and give him the lead role in another series as a reward.
Well, you know.
Well, in this case, it wasn't much of a reward. So,
well, they're
punishing him.
All right. Well, shall we give our vote on Bionic?
Thumbs down.
For those of you who couldn't guess, 4 thumbs down.
And you know what? I know that there are a lot of fans of this show. I mean, the ratings are still pretty good. I think.
What's interesting? I was doing a little research, and someone I think it was like CBS. Put it in their top five. Like top five new.
Yeah, I don't understand. Their
premiere was an enormous ratings grab.
Yeah.
But it had a 30% drop off in their second episode.
Yeah, but.
But know. I think it stayed constant from that point.
I don't get it. People are picking it as their best sub, and I'm sure some of you are going to write us, and that's great because I really want to understand where you're seeing quality here. I mean, I really do, because this is just utter garbage.
Stop telling people this is good television.
Okay.
Moving on.
Okay. Let's go to something good, because we've been, you know, down in the dumps a little
bit. Stop branding these things as good or bad. Let us make our own decisions.
All right.
Let's go to something.
Let's go to something that could be good or could be awful.
Journeyman.
Okay. We'll do Journeyman.
That's something that could be good or could be awful. How many people have seen Journeyman?
I have not seen Journeyman.
I have seen it.
Okay. I'll give you my
first take on Journeyman. Journeyman, to me, I was really excited. The actors that are involved.
Great cast.
Yeah. So I was ready to just buy this straight out. And I watched the pilot, and I was like, it was pretty average to just kind of not great. But there were some intriguing things to it. It didn't suck. Like, the quality didn't suck. It was just eh. So I kind of stuck with it a couple of, and it just, to me, hasn't pulled out of that eh. Like,
so it's in the place that Don has with Chuck.
Probably lower. I think Don maybe like Chuck more than I like Journeyman.
I felt more positive than he's
there's
portraying
this. There's a science fiction theme that seems adult going on through the show that I want to be able to stick with, but it's just not kicking in fast enough, or something's not happening.
I wish I could add to that, but honestly, I watched the first episode and just I actually thought the writing was passable. Mm-hmm. I thought the acting was pretty good. I thought the plot idea was okay, but I was just failed to be hooked by anything, and I just felt no desire to watch it again.
Did you see the episode where he proved to his wife that was that the pilot that he
that was the second episode, I think.
Okay.
Is this the airplane episode?
I don't know.
I don't know which episodes I've seen, but I've seen one or two episodes at this point, and I actually really liked it.
Okay,
the episode I saw at least. Yeah. You know, I like it. I love the lead actor.
Yeah, love the lead.
I thought that they were dealing with some actually really intelligent things. I mean,
you know, I agree.
He and his wife are having some serious issues in their relationship, and all of a sudden he starts traveling through time. And when he travels through time, he disappears from real time while he's gone. So yeah, he's
for like a day or 2 days or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like it's really hard for him in his relationship. And he finds out that he and his wife were trying to have a kid. He finds out that she's actually still on birth control. She's been lying to him.
Mm-hmm.
So it was handling sophisticated things. And there was just one little spot that I thought was just – that I just adore, which is he bumps into someone that he knows who's also stuck traveling through time like this.
That's the mystery that's in
which
super
is great.
Intriguing. Yeah.
And I just love it. She starts giving him advice on things he should do. He needs to get old cell phones. He needs to get old money and carry like old bills with him, and be careful with citrus. For some reason, it explodes when you travel.
But she's very mysterious. She's like, he's like, wait, what's going on? What's going on? She goes, I can't stick around. Bye. But don't, you know, make sure you carry old cell phones because the networks work, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so there's this mystery that they haven't yet. I haven't seen the last episode, so I'm not sure.
How far is he going back in time?
Not far.
Not too far.
Here's the biggest problem with the show. Oh. It's a Quantum Leap ripoff.
Yeah.
And essentially, he travels back in time, and he has to fix something in somebody's life in order to move on.
Oh, okay.
And unfortunately, it's been done.
That's Quantum Leap.
But I have to say that what I really liked about the episode I saw was that it wasn't obvious. It wasn't formulaic. In other words, you weren't quite sure how he was fixing this person's life, and it was like the bad version would have been that you were helping this girl get back in touch with her father and save his life because he's dying of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? No, she just gets to meet her father before he dies, and he's still an asshole, and he dies, but somehow that gets her life in order.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she doesn't save him, even though it was interesting. They took interesting. They made interesting choices.
Yeah,
you know,
but compared to like some of the episodes of Quantum Leap where they really it's a different show, but those shows were really
I thought I loved some awesome
topics.
I never saw that
while doing that.
Oh, really?
And,
yeah, he would like leap into somebody who was retarded and have to figure out how to functionally do what he had to do, even though he was in the body of somebody who was retarded.
Or leap into a black man, woman. A black man sitting in the back of a bus, and you know, or and sitting in the front of the bus right when he's taking a stand, and he's like, "Oh shit," or, you know what I mean? Like, these are like really interesting topics that different show, but yeah. Anyway, so I say that, to me, that's a thumb sideways.
So I'm thumb still sideways, waiting. Aaron, Don.
I just got failed to hook. I'm going to abstain because I really just watched it and had no opinion.
Petey,
okay, I give it a thumbs 3/4.
3/4 up. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Let's move on to Pushing Daisies, which is edited.
Daisies.
By our very own Lisa Lassick.
Edited by Lisa Lassick.
So, disclaimer.
So, it's a full disclosure.
Full disclosure, Geeks On has relation to Pushing Daisies.
Who's got a relationship?
But it's a fucking good show.
It is an amazing show.
Even without her involvement, I would be as addicted to the show as I am now.
I just feel
good at the end of every episode.
Yeah. Yes. I thought that the pilot to me was like a clockwork script to me. Mm-hmm. The second one, not so much. I was like, it felt a little
less so. True.
Foresty, but it's gotten better.
It's gotten better again.
But I thought they were back on track with episode 3.
Yeah, no, it really
once
is
they started
show.
Using Kristen Chenoweth a little more, who's this kind of big musical
who is
theater.
Unbelievable.
She's wonderful.
She's
in the
so
show.
Good.
But yeah. So, but honestly, all the supporting cast are wonderful. The two aunts. That's Audrey from
Rocky Horror,
Little Shop of Horrors. I think the other aunt is I think she's the crazy lady from Twin Peaks, obsessed with runners.
I don't know.
Say the casting in this is amazing.
It's wonderful.
I love the lead. I love the female lead.
The female lead's great.
She is such an interesting choice, and she's like. I think she's amazing.
Yeah.
What weirded me out is I wrote a screenplay a few months ago and went back to it, and like they were in my brain, down to the bees and the wall, and I was like, "What in the hell?" When I finally watched it, I was like, "My God, they were inside my head."
Must have been kismet.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
And to top it all off, wonderful acting, wonderful writing. But the design elements.
Yeah, the style. It's a great style.
It can't
style.
Be overlooked. It's Amelie. You know?
Yeah, it's but, very Amelie.
Let's just say this rivals many films in terms of how it's put together. Mm-hmm. It's not always put together as slick as a film. Sometimes you can see the edges, but it's really cool.
Well, I think some people don't understand. Like, I was talking to somebody. They said, well, yeah, but it doesn't look – the building didn't look real at all. And I was like,
That's the point.
Not the – Yeah, the style of it is looking like a little toy,
a little storybook,
Yeah. So you need to, embrace that style in order to get
the one
show.
Thing that concerns me about the show. Right, I love the show, I love it. Two thumbs up from me. But a lot of the people I've tried to encourage to see it have said it was a little strange. Don't you think?
Yeah,
Tracy
is a little weird.
Tracy is not entirely connected. She didn't get to see the pilot. She came in 2 episodes in. And she hasn't quite connected to it. I don't see the enthusiasm. It is my favorite thing when it's come out. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I was so excited to share it with my wife. And then she was kind of like,
I think it takes people off guard, which
they're not used to.
Which is great. Finally, something different, people. It's not another Law and Order episode. Mm-hmm. Ding 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 ding. Yeah. Hopefully they don't. The writers don't panic if the ratings are. I hear the ratings are great, but I hope they don't panic and turn into like CSI, another procedural, some type of DNA thing going on. Just
Amelie
to
needs
it.
CSI.
Yeah, because they do that sometimes.
Okay, so going
thumbs
around.
Up.
Thumbs way up.
Thumbs up. Yeah. All right. Excellent.
You got to stand up to get your thumbs higher with this.
Yeah, it really is a great show.
Okay, how about Reaper? Anyone seen Reaper?
I have not seen Reaper.
You've seen it?
I've seen it.
How about you, Aaron?
I have not seen it because you can't watch it online, and I missed the first couple episodes. So I tried watching it online, not there. Hopefully it's going to be on Juiced.
I only saw the first episode. And it was okay.
I heard it was okay.
There was one moment that I thought was just great. I couldn't believe they actually did it, where Satan basically brings the main character to an ice rink, and they're watching a guy in a Zamboni as he's driving around the Zamboni cleaning, and the Zamboni gets stuck. Mm-hmm. So the guy gets out to go and fix something, and while they're there, all of a sudden Satan makes the Zamboni start to move, and it runs over the guy, leaving this huge, ginormous swath of bloody ice trail across the thing. I mean, I'm talking about like a 30-foot long, like 6-foot wide streak. And I thought, I was like, wow, I couldn't believe that they got away with that. but I loved it. Mm-hmm. Now, the rest of it, I was kind of like, you know.
Reaper is the story of the three.
Let me tell you what it's
yeah.
premise of. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Go, no, go for it.
The premise of Reaper is this young couple. One of them gets sick, and one of them sells the soul of their firstborn child to the devil in exchange for a cure. Right. So they decide not to have a kid. They end up having a kid.
They decide not to have a kid, but it turns out that their doctor tells them that they're not fertile. So they decide that they don't need to use protection. Well, it turns out their doctor had to make a deal with the devil, too, and he lied to them. So then they did get pregnant, and they did wind up having a firstborn kid.
So according to the terms of the deal, the kid belongs to the devil on his 18th birthday. 18th birthday?
18th birthday.
Something like that.
And he becomes a reaper. He has to go and help catch souls that have escaped from hell.
Yeah.
And if
until his kid becomes 18?
For the rest of his life.
No, this is the kid.
Oh. Yeah,
the kid, when he turns 18, becomes the reaper.
Yeah.
All right?
And he has to do it for the rest of his life. If he doesn't, then his mother is going to go to hell. Satan will collect on her soul.
Right. So the devil keeps showing up, and the devil is I can never remember this guy's name.
But he plays the father in Twin Peaks.
Yeah, he's the father in Twin Peaks.
He is great.
He's charming. He is funny. He is a good choice for the devil.
Yeah.
Plays it very well. The basic premise is every week he shows up, the devil tells him, another soul's escaped. We found him. Here's a special device you need to catch the soul. Over the course of the episode, the device always breaks in every episode I've seen. Mm-hmm. And then they have to come up with something clever to capture the soul.
And when they capture the soul, they bring it to the waypoints between heaven or between earth and hell, which are of course things like the DMV.
Right. And for those of you who are fans of of Dead Like Me, the woman who works at the DMV is the boss from Dead Like Me. So,
by the way, I just realized we didn't tell anyone what Pushing Daisies was about in case they don't know. We should tell them, you know, what the storyline is.
Okay. What is the storyline?
Circling back to Pushing Daisies for one moment.
Okay. Story of Pushing Daisies, it's about a guy who has the ability to bring things back to life. He can touch any dead animal or person or even a fruit and it'll come back to life.
But now, only once.
No, only once. Now, here's the caveat. If he touches that thing a second time, it will die and be dead forever.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other caveat. If he lets it stay alive for more than 60 seconds, another life that's approximate to what it is will die. So, for example, if he touches a human, another human being will die in order for this person to stay alive.
Right.
If he touches a fly, it would be a fly or a bird, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, the point of this, what happens is he makes a living two ways. First, he's a pie baker, but his moonlighting job is he and a private detective go and they touch people who've been murdered and they solve the crimes and collect these people will tell him how they were murdered. He'll touch them again before the 60 seconds. They solve the crime and collect the money. Problem is, one of the people that gets murdered is his childhood sweetheart.
And chaos ensues. Go watch the episode.
He lets her live.
Right.
And now,
don't tell them. Go watch the episode.
Anyway, she's part of the cast.
Yes. Yeah.
Resuming Reaper.
Oh, I haven't seen Reaper, so I can't give a thumbs up down.
Okay, so you and I are the only two who've seen it, Peter?
Yep. Yeah, you know, I about thumb sideways, maybe a little higher. But, you know, I wasn't so inspired that I needed to go watch it again.
Well, part of my problem is the lead character, for me,
yeah,
is not someone I really – he's like Chuck for me. Yeah. I don't really give a crap about him. And the two sidekicks are both kind of loser slackers. And it's like, haven't we done these characters?
Yeah,
haven't we mocked that generation enough?
No. I mock you.
I feel like we've seen these characters before. And like I said, in every episode I've seen, the device breaks. They have to do something clever. Right. I feel like I've seen it already. I haven't been excited by it.
Thumbs down.
Thumbs leaning towards down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where are we moving next?
Despite an excellent performance by the devil.
Okay, well, this is only geeky in the extent that people who are geeky like things that are not necessarily mainstream. They like things that are really kind of, you know, very intelligent and things that are well-rated.
Okay.
Mad Men. Okay.
Now, there's a disclaimer here.
Aaron's sister is in Mad Men. Okay, now who has seen Mad Men other than me?
I
Your sister, the Christina Hendricks?
Yeah, she's hot.
Right.
My goodness.
So anyway, the story of Mad Men is it's about the inside scoop on the advertising world in, what is it, the 19...
Late 60s.
Late 60s. Or,
early no, 60s.
Early, late 50s, early 60s.
Early 50s, early 60s. And it is the highest rated show on TV right now in terms of critical acclaim. Okay. And it is actually some of the most brilliant screenwriting I have seen, you know, ever.
Yeah.
And what's brilliant about it is that they will set something up that will not – you will not understand. You'll be wondering, why is this person this way for 5 episodes? And then something will happen like 5 episodes later where you'll suddenly understand everything that's been happening. And you've been like just trying to figure it out forever. It's that it's so subtle. And it's,
well, it feels like the characters were developed way beforehand. A lot of television shows develop a character as they write.
Yeah.
It's just the way it works. And this feels like maybe there was a little more in-depth. I mean, they may be faking it. It just feels that way.
It feels great.
Well, it's the really Sopranos team, isn't it?
It is one of the guys from Sopranos.
One guy from Sopranos. Yeah, I thought it was like half the writer's room.
No, maybe he brought them with him. But basically, the lead writer is someone who wrote on The Sopranos. It was his pilot script to Mad Men that got him the job on The Sopranos.
Ah.
So, but it is really a brilliant show. It's now, if you've missed it at this point, you need to go out and get it like on
TV. Oh, they're going to rerun it. They're going to rerun it.
Or reruns. But AMC. It is really worth your time to check this out.
I don't know why it didn't tell me. I mean, I've watched 2 episodes.
I thought it was good.
It didn't tell me.
I just don't find it geeky at all.
It's like, not geeky.
I don't see even
– maybe that's why.
I don't think it's appropriate bringing it up here because I don't think
– Yeah, it's not geeky, but it is a good show. I would definitely say that.
Okay.
And the acting in it is great. My sister's good at it.
Your sister is great.
Your sister's really good at it.
Yeah. Can I bring up Smallville?
Yeah.
Just finished watching the whole of last season.
All right. So the new season has started. Oh, and again, as you know, Matt, they are completely off. They were off track last season, and they are just driving further and further off track.
You know what? I didn't mind last season. Oh. I actually, watching it completely through.
It's not Smallville anymore, though.
No, they're moving towards Metropolis and trying to do it. But I don't feel...
Didn't we read interviews while they were doing the first season where the head writer said, he will never fly.
Yeah.
No one will ever fly in this series.
Yeah. Well, no flights, no tights.
Yeah.
They're still sticking with that pretty much.
Yeah.
But the whole, like, evil Lana, devious Lana, blah, 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 it's just... I think just betraying the show series.
Well, no. See, I don't, because what they've said is that we're going to take the myth of Superman and turn it on his head. You know, they took, you know, him as Kal-El and said, oh, you're not being sent to Earth as saving you.
That.
You're being sent as Earth as conquering.
I love that.
So
but
what if Lana marries Lex?
Yeah, but you know? But the problem is they're they are betraying their own... show.
Right.
The own show was about this, them growing up, and now it's like some weird spy.
I have basically said to Kat while we were watching it that this is a sine curve of suck. Is that basically, I think it goes one really good episode that sort of reinforces the Superman universe, that sits in it, that really feels good. Mm-hmm. And then there are 2 to 3 that really just... And then it comes back up and I really enjoy it. And then 2 to 3 that are really down.
I'm just watching the series because I just like... You're to be tortured.
It's habitual now.
But so the new season is out. They've added Supergirl.
They've added.
And she's hot as hell.
They've
as
added
usual.
Bizarro.
Wait, they added a hot woman to Smallville?
Yeah. Shocking. Yeah. So there's almost no men on the show now.
Oh, really?
They just keep adding Lois Lane, Lana Lang, Supergirl. It's just, and they kill off everybody else who's a guy. Yeah. And then it's just piling it on chick after chick.
And actually, it's really funny because you can tell that Tom Welling, God bless him, has gained quite a bit of weight. He's looking chunky. He's got he's looking chunky. He actually he's a handsome dude, but he's looking a little chunky. And actually, I went on the message boards to see whether or not there was anything to mention. There are threads and threads about he's chunky. No, he's not.
Well, the guy's 40 years
he's
old.
Pudgy.
Now.
What are you talking about? Yeah.
Yeah, he was like late 20s when that series started.
But when they put the Green Arrow on the show and a bunch of other people, I felt like they kept on cutting to the Green Arrow because he's, you know, sort of svelte and really, you know,
he's
in
teen
shape
heartthrob, and it's a teen Heartthrob show.
Yeah, right. All right, so my rating is thumbs down. I'm going to still watch it because I don't know why. It's like this curse I've got. I just feel like I have to stick with the show because I've watched so
long. I have to go thumbs three quarters up because I'm still enjoying it, even though I know it's bad. I have not seen the new season.
All right, what's
the next one? Crack on me for watching Xena, a show I like, while you watch shows you don't like.
Yeah, but you give Xena a thumbs up.
It's because I like it.
Yeah, I don't like Superman. I'm just watching because I've got some weird
perhaps
mental
the point
problem.
I'm making is flying over your head.
All right, let's move on. What else we got?
Dexter.
Dexter. I saw the first season of it, which I really liked a lot.
I have not finished the first season of it, but it's incredibly good.
Hell of an amazing.
The new Dexter season is great as usual. Great writing, yeah. And they've come up with another kind of intriguing. I'm going to bring this up. I think only because I think a lot of shows on HBO and Showtime are doing this. These mega story arcs that only last a season. Great freaking idea.
Yeah,
I love the one story arc. It's kind of like 24.
Yeah,
yeah.
The season is the story.
Yeah.
After the season's done, the story's done. We move on to. It's a great way of doing kind of a. You know, the problem with Lost is that it's 5 years of one story.
Right.
This solves that problem. You have a great ending at the end of the season.
Has the Lost next season started yet?
No.
That's where we part ways. I actually think that the overarching story arc is a wonderful boon to a series. But I think that each season also needs to contain its own story arc.
So, you know, well Dexter, that's – I mean Dexter does that.
I think Lost – well, yeah, but I'm think with Lost, Lost would have been better served – to have individual season story arcs contained in their overarching five.
I guess that's what I
said. Well, actually, let's be honest. Lost does have them. They're just not as clear and concise as they are in Dexter.
They used to be.
They did used to be. They used to be. They were much stronger.
Yeah.
Like the very first episode was what's in the hatch.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
You mean season?
The first season was what's
in the hatch. The whole first season was a very strong season. What's in the hatch? And they get into the hatch.
But I think season two actually got a little weird.
Season two dropped the ball. Season three is like everybody. Yeah, that's my mom literally called me up. She goes, "I'm watching this show because of you," because I sent my parents the first two seasons of Lost because I wanted her to see Dan Kim and everybody working. And she was like, "Okay, now I'm hooked." But the third season, I just have to say, how do I put it? What?
Yeah. That was like, that was so funny that my mom said that.
All right.
Hasn't started yet, though.
Hasn't started.
Anyway,
so Dexter, four thumbs up?
Four thumbs up.
Great, way great up, show. Actually. Yeah.
Great show.
How about, has anyone seen Moonlight?
I haven't.
Okay. No.
I saw the pilot. Full disclosure, I've been working at CBS lately. I saw the pilot, and I just couldn't take it.
It's just cringeworthy.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question.
It's cringeworthy.
I heard that it was angel-like.
No, it's
better
not
or
angel.
Worse than Bionic Woman?
It's Forever Night. Infinitely worse.
It's Forever Night?
It's Forever Night.
I liked Forever Night.
Forever Night was good. Midnight or Moonlight is not.
I liked Forever Night.
Yes. I wish it was good.
Shut up.
I wish it was as good as Forever Night.
Oh, okay.
I liked Forever Night. Moonlight.
Not as a camp value, though?
Huh?
Not as a camp thing?
Don, why didn't you like Forever Night?
Huh?
Never mind.
You don't like Camp Forever Night, Don?
Anyway, it's not a good show, and I couldn't get past the
pilot.
Now, I hear that the ratings are up on it.
They are. They've just extended them for four more episodes.
Yeah, so the ratings are up on that. Maybe I should go back and give another watch on maybe something has happened.
It was another one of those ones where like the dialogue sucked.
But here's the
thing.
And
every episode I've seen has been done by Forever Night.
The premise is the same old thing.
It's Forever Night.
It's well, and it's Blade, and it's everything else. I mean, even Forever Night, if it's about a detective who lives forever and solves crimes, is a stupid idea too. I mean,
they have
it's
the
been
same
done,
characters as Forever Night.
Done
it's a direct ripoff, and they just don't even acknowledge it.
Or Angel. Anyway, moving on.
Or Thumbs Angel. Down. Yeah, same shit. Right.
Anyone see Caveman?
No,
no.
I saw 2 minutes.
I couldn't bring myself to. Even
I kind of forgot to watch it.
Yeah, I did too. Okay, so we have no take.
We pass on Caveman. Next.
You know, I'm sort of running into the mainstream stuff at this point. I got Ugly Betty, Desperate Housewives.
No, not even remotely geeky.
Have you guys been watching Beauty and the Geek?
Although I will stress that every new like mainstream show seems to be about, doesn't it suck to be rich? God, yeah, we're all rich and
it's the return
sucks.
To dynasty.
Yeah,
it's the return to dynasty
old,
right
old
now.
Old 80s like, thing.
Come on. Beauty and the Geek has a new season that's out. And it's interesting. It's kind of this, it's starting to get to be kind of the same old, but they did try to mix it up. But they have a male beauty and a female geek.
Oh.
So they did mix it up a little bit.
All right.
And that gets kind of funny. Like last episode, they had to the geeks had to dress up their beauties as superheroes, and they went to Comic-Con and had like a stage show where some like real writers, comic book writers, judged them on their storyline and then their costumes and stuff.
Wow.
And the male beauty was like, oh, I don't understand why I can't just go out as myself.
Well,
which was great. So that's anyway. Funny.
And just as a final closer, I just auditioned for Knight Rider. And
but that's a movie.
I've read the script. No, it's a TV show.
TV show. Yet another remake of the Knight Rider show.
TV show.
Is this the third one?
I got it.
Third remake?
Yeah.
Well, Knight Rider 2000 or whatever it was. Yeah.
But Knight Rider 2000 followed a failed pilot. There was another pilot that failed, I think.
I don't know.
I don't know about that.
Peter?
I got to admit, I loved Knight Rider as a kid.
I did too.
You know, I can't understand in retrospect what I could have liked about this. No, I mean, really, I think
about
it.
Because you're a kid.
No, but
it's talking car.
I think about it and I try and figure out, like, what in the world could a talking car have done that would have been interesting in any way, fashion, or form?
Oh, Michael.
And, you know, I can't understand it. But, like, which is why I really don't understand why they're remaking this.
Having read the pilot, not bad. Actually, not bad writing. So,
what part are you auditioning for?
I'm auditioning for the
car's cousin.
It's like Michael Stryker, who's like David Hasselhoff's son. David Hasselhoff is again on the show as Michael Hayden.
Of course,
His son, and it's his son's roommate from college.
Michael Stryker?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Right. Thumbs down.
Yeah.
No. All right. So overall, thumbs up or down for the season of television?
I like that there's a lot of geeks.
I think there's some great stuff coming.
I think it's a great thumbs up for geeky television.
I'm breaking ranks with the rest of you. Overall, I'm not thrilled with the creativity I'm seeing this season.
Okay.
I'm not excited about
most of
it.
Episodes of Viva Laughlin, if you want creativity.
And most of the writing, has been subpar so far.
Well, let me also mention Eureka. Which I couldn't follow this season. I fell out.
I still like it.
So. You guys are nuts.
I'm going to throw it out there. Drawn Together is back for its fourth season.
God, that show.
I don't get that
I can't
show.
Watch that show. It's too
I
foul.
I love
it
that
It is too
show
foul for me.
With a passion. Okay. It is my favorite cartoon aside from Venture Brothers right now. And Venture Brothers, if none of you have watched it, it's my newest addiction.
Okay.
So worth taping. It's Ben Edlund.
Oh, okay.
It's The Tick. It's the same writer as The Tick.
Oh, okay.
And the writing is so good.
What's it about?
Well, you know, we met that guy. I met him at an art show.
Doesn't surprise me.
We have friends who know him.
I have some mutual friends with him.
Get him on the show.
We should try.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So what is the story?
The basic premise of the Venture Brothers is it's a small nuclear family that sort of spoofs the Johnny Quest series.
Mm-hmm.
Two brothers, the Venture Brothers, one of whom is sort of hopelessly geeky. The other, which is kind of the jock. They're both sort of dumb. The self-obsessed, narcissistic, genius, mad scientist father, and their government-aside, mad, sociopathic bodyguard killer. And the four of them have random encounters with these hilarious villains every episode.
It's okay.
Very well written, very random, and very cerebral.
Okay.
Check it out.
Alrighty.
All right. Well, should we do our wrap it up into our geek bit?
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up into our bit this time. And make sure you write us. We miss so many shows, you know, Robot Chickens and all that stuff.
Oh, so many shows.
So write on our forums.
Let us know
what
we're missing, and we'll do an update next
time. www.geekcon.com.
There's a lot of TV up there now.
Let's do the bit. All right. So what is our bit this week?
Donnie Don.
Our bit this week is true and false. Each of us has prepared one or two examples of true television pilots or series, quick synopsis of that, and a false television pilot or series.
Yep.
And the other three geeks will have to choose which one is real and which one's the bullshit.
Okay. I think I picked one everyone knows.
I think I did too.
All right. Well, I have...
It's hard to go back and pick these out.
I have three. Two are real, one is fake.
Okay.
All right. Who wants to start? I'll start.
Aaron,
start it up. The pilot starts with Kron Nizzlebop, an intergalactic police detective, crash landing on Earth while chasing Thorn, a dangerous criminal from his home planet. Knowing the destructive nature of his enemy, Kron explains the situation to local authorities, hoping for assistance. Instead, labeling him as a, quote, crazy wackadoo, I guess that's it's in quote because that's what they called him in the pilot, they send him straight to the city mental institution. But it is there that Kron meets four men willing to believe his story, and together they break out out on a mission to save Earth. For the rest of the series, these five wacky and unpredictable men search the planet for Thorn, and along the way discovering that heroes can be found in the craziest places.
Okay.
That's one of them. The second one, the show follows the exploits of David Crabtree, who, while shopping at a used car lot, purchases a dilapidated 1928 Porter touring car. Crabtree heard the car call his name in a woman's voice, which turned out to be that of his deceased mother, Abigail. For the rest of the series, Crabtree is pursued by Captain Manzini, a devious car collector who is determined to acquire the valuable automobile from Crabtree. Which one do you think?
I think the second one.
I think the second
one's
the real one.
Yeah, because Don ruined it.
Yeah.
Jerk.
I knew.
Do you know what that one is called?
Yeah, that one's called My Mother the Car.
That's right.
And I have it on my list.
And
bastard.
The second one, which is fake, is called Space Crackers.
Okay.
Which I actually think could work as a television show.
Space
one
cracker.
Real alien and a whole bunch of crazy people from a mental institution running around Earth trying to save
Why
the planet.
Not?
Come on.
Okay. One is called The Frostbergs. Okay.
Okay.
It's an animated cartoon about a family of Jewish snowmen who move in next to Santa Claus at the North Pole, creating racial tensions among the elves because of social differences. These differences come to a boil, so to speak, when the young snowman boy Icy runs away with Santa Claus's daughter Claire. It's independently financed by Abigail Bronfen, heiress to the Seagram fortune, who also wrote the screenplays and children's novel. Only two episodes were ever completed, and the show was never aired, but released recently on the internet. The other one is called Mr. Smith. It's about an orangutan named CJ, who was a run-of-the-mill orangutan who gains the power of speech in an IQ of 256, thanks to a lab accident. Now smarter than most humans, the orangutan was given the name Mr. Smith in a job with the United States government as a consultant, although he advised top-level politicians on the most classified of subjects. Mr. Smith's real identity was obviously kept secret from the general public and most of the government. Crazy antics ensue.
Hmm. Well, just because there was all sorts of crazy monkey and movie television shows back in the 70s and 80s. I'm
going to
go for the monkey movie as being real.
What about you guys?
I have to go with the first one. Your details were very good on that one.
You think that one's
real? As a reward for you, if that was your creation, I'm going with the first
one. We'll see.
Monkey movie.
Monkey movie. Actually, the monkey movie is the real one.
Racial tensions between Santa Claus and too raw.
It was beautifully done.
Too raw.
All right. So I have not so long a synopsis as you guys, as obviously you can tell by my tiny little
piece
paper.
Of toilet paper.
But basically three shows. All right. The first one's called Overwatch.
And we're supposed to pick which one is real or which one is fake?
Well, since one is fake and two are real, pick the fake one.
Pick the fake one.
All right. Okay. The first show is called Overwatch. The lead character's name is Tobias Stern, and it's all about the turnover of Iraq. 22-year-old lieutenant, basically, in Iraq, and he's dealing with the turnover of Fallujah province to the Iraqis and how chaos ensues. The second show is called Baller's Wives.
Okay.
All right. It's six women, basically, and it's covering their lives. The reality show, two baseball, two from football, two from basketball. And it's covering their lives and how they're dealing and all their craziness and rich and everything like that. And the last one is called Dash for Cash. Dash, the number four, cash. It's a hybrid reality / sitcom. And it's about four dysfunctional couples and their race for cash across the United States. And it is semi-scripted. It is half scripted and half improv. Okay. And half just these people dealing with their craziness. Which one is fake?
I know which one. Oh, it's fake?
Mm-hmm.
Well, which one do you think is real?
I know Baller's Wives is real.
Yeah, I've heard of that one too.
Dash for Cash actually sounds like a pretty good title for something.
Well, the first one kind of sounds like a TBS series, but I think it had a different name.
What was the first one?
Overwatch.
I know there was another one, but it wasn't called Overwatch. I'm going to say that one is the fake one.
I'm going with Dash for Cash.
Dash for Cash is the fake one?
Yeah.
Aaron says Overwatch is the fake one. Peter?
I'll say Overwatch is the fake one.
Overwatch is the fake one.
Yes.
Okay. Alrighty.
Like semi-scripted. That doesn't even make sense. Like, it's like a reality semi-scripted
It's show. A reality yeah. semi-scripted show.
Okay.
Alright. So I also have three. I used to have four, but somebody else took my mother the car.
I have ruined it for me.
I have changed the titles on all three, though.
Okay.
Okay. From their original versions. The first one is My Buddy Buddha. The show follows the exploit of Buddy and his college roommate, Sid, who believes he's the literal reincarnation of Buddha, though you'd never know it. Sid is a beer-swilling, womanizing blowhard with a chronic cigarette addiction. Though Buddy always tries to walk the straight and narrow, Sid always seems to manage to steer him off the high road, steering him instead onto a frat keg party that is raided by the FDA, a Jamaican pot smuggling ring, and a brief career as a male stripper for elderly shut-ins. Despite the chaos that Sid always leads Buddy into, he also brings startling new understandings of himself, the world around him, and leads him to reevaluate the life he'd been planning for himself. That is My Buddy Buddha. Happily Ever After, Later. Prince Charming, Snow White, and Unlucky Dwarf are magically banished from their enchanted kingdom by Snow White's wicked stepmother. The spell goes awry, however, and accidentally sends the stepmother and her magic mirror along for the ride. Now it's up to the new Charming family to adjust to life in Southern California, where they must learn to fit in and raise the next generation of the Charmings.
I don't know. I hope that's real.
And Spellbound. A self-obsessed, arrogant fairy godmother abuses her powers and has them stripped from her. Left to fend for herself, she takes a job as an inner-city English teacher. There, she tries to earn her wand back by teaching the students to pour themselves into their poetry and lyrics. With her help, their poetry and rap lyrics start to produce real magic, often with life-changing and hysterical consequences. That is Spellbound.
Okay, I know which one the real one is.
Okay.
So you guys try to
Okay, guess. There's one
well,
real
but
there's one real one.
Oh, there, oh. Yeah.
Oh,
the,
there is.
The three that are up there is My Buddy Buddha, Happily Ever After, Later, and Spellbound.
I'm hoping that Happily Ever After Later is real, so that's what I'm voting for.
I think that one's real. I think.
Wait, you thought this? You were hoping the second one.
Yeah, the one about the Charmings and.
That's the Charmings. That's Isn't the that Charming. Different than Happily Ever After Later?
No, that's the. I've renamed all the titles.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah, that one I think is real. I think that Spellbound is definitely not.
You all are correct. The Happily Ever After Later is actually The Charmings, a 1987 television sitcom series. The series ran on ABC for two seasons. Each episode shows the Charmings trying to adapt to their new life while Lillian and their wisecracking magic mirror watch from upstairs.
Ugh.
I gotta say,
you described it, it could have been good.
Yeah, actually.
It was terrible. It was terrible.
It was really bad.
What was the first one again?
My Buddy Buddha.
My Buddy Buddha, that's right.
Oh.
All right.
Excellent.
I got a couple of links.
One is I wanted
to do one quick thing.
Okay.
We all remember Manimal, right?
Yeah.
This is the...
trying to blot that out of my
third... This is the voiceover from it at the beginning. Dr. Jonathan Chase. Wealthy, young, handsome. A man with the brightest of futures. A man with the darkest of pasts. From Africa's... deepest recesses to the rarefied peaks of Tibet, heir to his father's legacy in the world's darkest mysteries, Dr. Jonathan Chase, master of the secrets that divide man from animal, animal from man, manimal.
That's long.
Yeah.
I loved Manimal when I was a kid.
Oy
vey. I loved it.
I don't remember it, but I thought that was the greatest cheesy intro ever. You know, a man with the brightest of futures.
One thing I thought was really strange, though, like Manimal got canceled kind of unceremoniously.
Yeah.
And so I was watching Probe, another show I liked on the Sci-Fi channel. Probe was great. Probe contains the last episode of Manimal.
Oh, it does?
The two of them meet Manimal. If I'm remembering this right, I could be wrong, but Manimal is completed in another series, and I'm pretty sure it was Probe.
Weird.
Probe had never had any super supernatural stuff in it. It was all explainable by...
Yep.
Okay.
All right, that's why it was so weird.
All right, so I got a couple of links. One is to a steampunk time machine. It's a really, really neat, wonderful-looking, cool steampunk time machine. I'll put it up for people to see. The other one is how, for Halloween, it's how to make a flashing Mario Brothers pumpkin. So it looks like a one-up or one of the mushrooms. It's really good. And last but not least, just a little piece of fan mail. Matt, I'm sending a picture of my new son, Garrett. As you can see, the force is strong with this young one. It's his little baby son. Soon he will too will learn the ways of the geek and join the ranks of one of the faithful. Love the show. Miss you guys when you're not around. Take care. Think geek. Josh, it would mean a lot to me if you could give Garrett a shout-out on your next show. So here's the shout-out to Garrett.
Garrett! Welcome to Geekhood.
Welcome to the fold. And here's a picture of Garrett with his baby lightsaber.
Nice.
It's a very cute, shiny. I wrote him back and I told him I hope that the safety was on.
Well, everybody, I hope everybody has a great geek week
You've
coming
killed
up.
Another hour and a half with the geeks.
That's right. Your life is wasting away. Yeah. So go out and do something, for God's sake.
Go do some jumping jacks, for God's sake.
Buy some dice.
Exactly. Anyway, I hope you come back for our next episode, which is going to be sooner than later.
All right.
Yes. All right. Have a good geek week. Sorry.
Can we just try that again?
Have a good geek week, everybody.
Rock it out.
Bug the website or anything?
Geek it out.
No.
Okay.